For members only, Golf Smarter number 292, published on August 2, 2011, is brought to you by the new book, The Lost Fundamental, One Simple Move, Better Golf Forever by Tony Manzoni. Available in the Golfer's Mart at golfsmarter.com. For more, listen to episode number 291.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Becoming a better golf photographer with Robert Kaufman.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to Golf Smarter for members only, Robert.
Well, good morning.
How are you? I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well, thanks.
Okay, so that was just for the audience because he and I, Robert and I had, you know, we were together earlier this week. We're old friends. And, well, hey, you know, we're on the show. Hey, how are you? It's great to talk to you. Hey.
Let's leave the old part out of it.
We're friends that have known each other for a number of years. How's that?
That sounds much better.
Our bodies are telling us we're old, but we're friends and known each other for a long time. Yes. But the reason I wanted to bring Robert on the show is because I am a big fan of Robert's photography. And we've talked for a long time about doing a show because on golf photography, because we've seen a lot of people who send us, hey, look where I went on my vacation, and the photographs are terrible.
Right, right.
So let's talk a little bit before we get into instruction. What are you painting there with a pencil? Isn't that amazing? This microphone picks up your pencil scratches.
Uh-oh.
So tell me how long you've been shooting golf courses and how you got started with that.
Well, golf courses in particular, I've probably been shooting since I got into the golf business, publishing business, and that's probably been close to 25 years now. Prior to that, I did work my way as a full-time photojournalist. So I've been in photography now really ever since I've been a young kid. And we don't need to go into exactly how many years that's been.
I was about to say, nice dance. And I'm avoiding how old we really
are. Aren't we? I know. Isn't that funny? How, as we get older, we avoid telling.
I feel like women. I never tell my age. Yeah, let me look at the back of your hands. Okay.
Just look at me and guess. That's all.
And as a photojournalist, were you what was your specialty?
My specialty really was editorial and corporate photography. I worked a lot for magazines domestically and internationally. I did assignments for Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated, Forbes, all the major publications, and I also represented at the time, a major photo agency, which was based out of Paris. So I was covering events and putting together stories for them here on the West Coast and doing a fair amount of travel. So I've had
always done a fair amount of travel.
I've always done a fair amount of travel. It's just something in my blood, and I've grown up with it, you know, and just can't seem to stop. There's too much out there to see.
And just to make sure everyone is aware, I'm not throwing him softballs here. I've always wanted to ask him these questions, so I thought this would be the best way to do it instead of sitting around, you know, drinking coffee going, so, Robert, how long have you been doing this? I've always wanted to ask these questions.
Oh.
And so where did the transition to golf get started from working, you know, Time Magazine, Sports Illustrated?
The transition came back in the late 80s when I was admittedly burnt out on being a freelance, independent photojournalist, always having to prove yourself to another client, another publication. And, you know, the travel part got old, raising a family that went along with it was kind of a, you know, a challenge to that whole process. So I started looking for a different challenge, and unbeknownst to me, it created more challenges to my lifestyle.
Isn't that the case?
Yeah, but I was like all of us, you know, young and naive, and not knowing a lot about the world out there. And most of all, I didn't know one thing about the golf industry. Never had any interest in it before. I'd never published ever did anything that goes along with putting the magazine together. But I decided to make that leap of faith and start a golf publication here in Northern California.
Oh, and what was that?
Golf Today magazine, which I started back in June of, well, actually, September 87 was the first issue, right after the U.S. Open was played here at the Olympic Club.
That was really the impetus, is like, I've got these great photographs, and I can make my own magazine.
Well, it's not just having the great photographs, but it's just I had an inkling for the media and for publishing, and golf just kind of presented itself through my network and some other folks that I knew that were involved in the industry, but not having been directly involved, I was not aware of what was going on. Mm. So, I jumped into it with cold feet and quickly warmed them up.
And get them burned.
Well, yeah, realize all the behind the scenes work of what goes into putting a magazine together, all the different aspects of it. It's not just, picking it up on your newsstand and you read the article. There's a lot that goes in behind it that, I quickly learned. So I was fresh meat in the publishing industry. So had to learn quick. And that was back in the dark ages of computers and doing layouts on your desktop and,
Right. 87. We're talking like the beginning. PageMaker 1.
Exactly. PageMaker 1, which I...
On a Mac SE 30, I bet.
No.
There was black and white screens on the Macs at that point, right?
This was like a 12-inch, one-piece iMac with 1 gigabyte.
No, there was no iMac in 87.
No, not – it was a Mac.
Yeah, it was just a Mac.
Oh, yeah, not – oh, this is way
before. Macintosh.
Macintosh, thank you, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because I was doing print layout at the time as well for my own project. It's like, oh, I don't need to hire a graphic designer. I'll teach myself to do that.
Exactly.
I'll print it myself down at the Kinko's at the corner.
Well, that's really how I put together my first issue. The very first one was done
really?
With actual cut and paste.
Yep.
On the board. And then the second issue, I did a crash course in PageMaker and learned how to do it as I went along month by month.
Amazing.
So. A lot of hours.
Now, were you a golfer before this all started, or did this get
nope.
you into golf?
Nope. Got me into golf.
Oh, that's interesting. That it's like usually a guy starts playing golf and goes, how can I make a living playing golf?
Oh, yeah. I don't know how many of those I've run into now.
Oh, even my limited experience is like people are like, oh, I love playing golf. How do I make a living at it? I want to quit my insurance job and, create the perfect tee.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I can make a fortune with this short book. And
exactly.
And it's like, no, you really can't.
Well, no, I mean, it's funny you say that because as a result of my involvement in the golf industry over the years, I've been to a number of PGA merchandise shows, which, you may have been to as well. And, you go there one year and you see a gazillion different gadgets back there, the next greatest thing. And then you just know in your heart that they are not going to be there next year.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I remember the show, I think I've been to two of the PGA shows, and not in Orlando. I've been to the dinky one in Las Vegas.
Oh, in Vegas, right?
Yeah, everyone says, yeah, this sucks. But I've never been to the one in Orlando, which is supposed to be enormous. But the one that I was in Vegas, there was a product there that I thought was phenomenal and actually won that year's best product of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And within 10 months, I found this product at Marshall's on it's like $4 for this thing that they were charging $39.95 for.
Yeah,
nobody wants it.
Now it's a closeout.
Well, and what's crazy is they were called birdie balls. They're little plastic rings that you can hit and it feels like a golf ball and you can just crush it and it only goes like 20 yards. So it's great for warming up at a place that doesn't have a driving range.
Right.
And so I bought this box of 25 of them and I've lost three or four at this point, but I still take them out and people are like, that is the coolest thing ever. Where did you get that? It's like, it's a collector's item. You cannot,
it is, exactly. You I've got a lot of those in the garage.
Do you really? Well, we're going to be selling them at golfsmarter.com. The closeout here. No, I'm kidding. We're not. We're not selling
them. No. Don't call me. Call Fred.
Robert, you want to sell those? How many do you have? Really? You want to sell those? Okay. So, but you're still involved in publishing.
Oh, yeah. I've been involved in publishing golf content publishing, golf media publishing, you know, for, like I mentioned earlier, for 25 years, going back to 87 when I got in. So, you know, once I was in, I couldn't get out.
Yeah. Right. So what are you involved with now?
Currently now, one of my bigger clients has been for the last, I want to say 7, 8, 9 years with California Tourism. When we started up a program back in 2003, I believe it was, to formulate a golf marketing campaign for the state of California to promote golf around the state, around the country, and internationally. So I got involved with that program, and we started putting out an annual publication, which gets distributed through the state and their tourism offices and tour operators and golf tournaments, hotels, you know, all over the world, really. So that publication is really the currently the only one that I'm involved in publishing on an annual basis. But then I'm involved with other projects and publications from an outside consultancy basis, but not directly involved as the publisher.
Okay. I'm actually fascinated by the California tourism one. Do we have access to it? Can anybody see that magazine or get a hold of it? Or is it just for the tourism industry?
No, it's actually available online. So if you go to visitcalifornia.com/golf, there will be a link to it, and you can view the whole digital version of the magazine.
Visitcalifornia.com/golf.
Golf, correct.
Okay. And then we can see the whole thing, including your photography.
Including some of my pictures on there, sure.
Of places in California.
California, exactly.
So where are some of the more exotic golf courses that you've photographed?
Outside of California anywhere?
No, outside. I mean, California. Outside. Okay, we got California. Is there anything interesting in California that you've done? I mean, there's Pebble Beach. Everyone's got a great picture from Pebble Beach. And
let's not go so far as to say everyone's got a great picture of Pebble Beach. They may have a picture of Pebble Beach.
I have a great picture of Pebble Beach.
Okay, maybe you do, Fred. We have to classify what is a picture and what is a great picture.
Yeah, and what is a photograph? What's a picture? What's a snapshot? What's a photograph? Right?
Yeah,
they are different. And everyone has I stood on top of the 8th tee looking down at the green at number 7 at Pebble Beach, and has that same shot that you can find everywhere.
Exactly.
And that's not necessarily a great shot. It depends on the weather that day and the clouds and the sky.
So many different factors. But anyway, as far as exotic places outside of California, it's everywhere from St. Andrews, Scotland, to Ballybunion in Ireland, and Royal Harlech in Wales, and Troon in New Zealand, in China. I mean, it spans the globe. I just returned from Canada, which presented some nice photo opportunities. And the problem there is, you know, one thing you need to keep in mind for anyone when they're traveling as much as I do and really having their eye on photographing golf courses, you're just kind of a prisoner of when you're there sometimes, because you're not always going to hit the ideal weather. Or the ideal light, you know. So those factors come into play all the time, and then to any great photograph, they're of utmost importance. So unfortunately, you can't always predict, you know, the time of year and the day that you're going to be there, that the light will be the best. So you do have to sometimes get creative, and sometimes be very patient, or sometimes you're just out of luck, you know.
And so time of day, now I want to get to some of the details and we'll go back to other questions. But So the best time of day that you found that you like to shoot?
Well,
on a golf course?
Really, for any photographer, shooting landscapes, you know, especially golf courses, which are landscapes.
Yep.
The golden hours really are early morning, late evening. You know, when that sun is up above the horizon.
Barely.
Barely, yeah. Just rising, the early morning light, when it's softest, or when it's setting. Okay. You know, otherwise you get into the middle part of the day and then you're dealing with very harsh lights and you just don't get the definition of a landscape. So you really need to pay attention to the shadowing and a lot of the details of that landscape.
And so really, is it the shadows that make it the unique like that? Or is it you saying the soft light of the morning? I mean, does dusk and dawn pretty much have the same softness to the light?
Pretty much, you know, and I found that it even varies depending upon where in the world you are. You know, you know, here, for instance, I don't find, like, when I say here, I mean Northern California, as opposed to maybe going to Hawaii, I'll throw out. You know, the light in Hawaii, because of the way the sun shines over there.
Because you're on an island.
Maybe you're on an island. The ozone layer is different. I don't know. The sun comes through differently, and that affects the light. So your early morning light over there is going to be much different than your early morning light here, and vice versa with the afternoon as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, the shadows, you know, do really can play a big part in your composition and the way you look at a landscape and how you utilize all the different elements that are part of that composition. So the shadows do come into play very much.
So if you're on the golf course, you're playing golf and you bring your camera with you, if you're teeing off at noon, wait to the end of your round before you start snapping photos that you want to be something you want to hang on the wall. Or if you're getting an early morning round, get started right away.
While you're playing?
Oh, do you not do that? Do you not play golf and take pictures at the same time?
I do. Only because at times I have to. Mm-hmm. I have no choice because of, you know, the way I travel on occasion. But when I go out and if I have the intent of wanting to photograph a golf course and coming away from there with what I feel are, you know, great photos of that course in my mind, as opposed to a snapshot of hole number 8, I'm going to go while I'm playing, I'm going to kind of be looking around and observing, you know, some of the different angles from where I can photograph. And then I'll come back later in the day or I'll come back early in the morning to get that photograph. Okay. Because it's going to look much different in the morning. It's going to look much different in the evening than it will at high noon. Mm. Yeah. So
I'm thinking about photographs that I've seen and maybe we should just go online and look at some of them. But I now... You know, it's the afternoon sun when it's straight up and coming right down on top of a mound, a hill, a bunker or something. It's just the lighting is just even and flat in a way.
Exactly. It's very harsh. It's very flat. There's no definition to the environment that you're trying to photograph.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's why you need that shadowing, you know, so you can – kind of define looking down a fairway, whether you're looking at it from an elevated point of view, then you can see a lot of the humps and bumps in the fairway or, you know, the shadows.
Because of the shadows.
The shadowing from a sand bunker or the shadowing from the trees or, you know, reflections in a pond or a lake, you know, things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So there are a lot of different elements when you're looking out there on a golf course, when you're wanting to get that good, great photo of a fairway.
Yeah, actually, one of my favorite photographs that I took was in Arizona late in the day, and it was really a phenomenal, lots of color in the sky, but it was the silhouette. There were two silhouettes, and one was clearly a large cactus, and the other one was someone just getting ready to take their shot. But those two silhouettes made it much more interesting than if I was taking a picture of my friend swinging the club.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and when you mention the Southwest, for instance, that's an area that presents amazing light conditions, you know, in the early morning, late afternoon.
Right.
You know, with the sun setting, you get the desert environment. You know, you get that harsh green against the stark desert with cactus. I mean, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know, if it's composed properly. Yeah.
We'll get to composition in a second. But there was one other element that I wanted to talk about that adds or detracts from a photograph like that is the sky.
Mm-hmm.
What are your preferences?
I presume you're referring to
what's going on in the sky when you take your picture.
Well, again, you're just kind of a victim of what's in front of you at the time. I like to have some clouds in the sky, mm-hmm. you know, to provide some depth to the photograph.
More texture, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know, hopefully, if you get lucky again, then you have that to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, I was on a recent vacation in Europe, and there was one day there were these large, white, puffy clouds, but that was mm-hmm. not—it was not one continuous cloud. There were just, you know, an incredibly blue sky behind these white, puffy clouds that were, you know, around, not full, and it just added so much texture to the landscape photographs and the buildings and the areas.
Yeah,
it was amazing. Yeah. It just made my pictures that much better.
Oh, it does. It just adds, it makes it that much more dramatic. So, yeah, it's the whole view that you have to look at, not just the green on the fairway. You have to look at the sky, look at the mountains, look at the trees, everything around that golf course.
Yeah. So in the landscaping element of a photograph, well, let's talk more about the composition. I'm fascinated by this. Talk about the composition of your landscape. If a golf course we're talking about is pretty much landscape,
mm-hmm.
How do you compose it with your eye, or do you need to be looking through a viewfinder?
I first compose with my eye. When I'm at a golf course and I'm looking around, whether I'm playing or I'm just, you know, walking around, I am always visualizing a photograph. That's just the way my mind is set up, mm-hmm. you know, because I have those, you know, what I feel are innate instincts that a photographer needs to visualize a photograph. So, you know, I'm always looking around. I'm always aware of my surroundings. And in my mind or in my eyes, I'm already composing that photograph before I put that camera up to my eye. So, you know, again, it's just something that, you know, and I hate to be so blasé about this, but, you know, my belief is to be a great photographer, it's something that you just naturally have. Mm-hmm. You have that eye, or you don't have it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, me and you could be standing out on hole number 18 at Pebble Beach on the tee box, and the two of us are going to see two totally different scenes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You'll be looking left. I'll be looking right. I'll be looking straight. You'll be looking down. You know what I'm saying? So it depends upon how your eye captures the scene in front of you. And to me, that's the way I photograph.
So now it's interesting because then you put it up to your eye and you're looking through the viewfinder,
mm-hmm.
And then you're composing, additionally composing from there. But what's so interesting today is people are not composing their shots in a viewfinder anymore. They're holding their hands, especially if you're our age, you're holding your hands out as far as they'll go, and you're looking at this 3-inch screen, you hope.
Right, right.
And composing it that way. And you really don't. It's hard to compose it. That's a picture. That's a snapshot.
Yeah, exactly. Those are people taking snapshots. Those aren't photographers. Those are people that just want to record the location they've been at and say, hey, I played number 18 at Pebble Beach. Here it is. You know.
But how do the rest of us take advantage of your expertise and create with that snapshot a more beautiful photograph?
Well, again, it just comes back to, you know, understanding the most crucial element of a photograph, and that's the light. We talked about that a little earlier. Understanding how to use as many elements in the image as possible without really creating too busy of a scene. You know, and out on a golf course, it might be things like, you know, incorporating the flag, the bunkers, ponds, a lake, trees. You know, it just every golf course presents different landscapes. I shouldn't say every golf course, you know, most do. I mean, there's a lot of blah looking courses out there that you really can't do much with no matter what.
Yeah.
You know, but for the most part, you know, the Pebble Beaches of the world and the St. Andrews and the more recognizable courses do present a lot of different angles. And that's something you have to work with, too, is you know, experiment from different angles. Don't just stand on the tee box and photograph a fairway. You know, elevate yourself. Get down low. Get behind a tree. Stand up on a golf cart. You know, get yourself inside a bunker. You know, just find different angles.
And again, with digital photography, just keep snapping. You may end up with something you like, right? You have the opportunity to just keep shooting and shooting and shooting.
It's the cheapest thing you can do, and it's so easier, you know, obviously from back in the olden days when you had to go out and buy film. And if you
carry
ran
out, it with you.
Carry rolls of film with you, load them up all the time, and if you ran out, you ran out, you know. So,
and so when you're composing a shot, now say the main subject of what you see is your photograph, is okay. So here you're taking a shot of someone about to hit a ball, their approach shot towards the green. In composing it, that main subject obviously is the golfer. Should that person be in the center of the photograph?
Well, that's actually an interesting thing you just brought up, is when I shoot golf course photographs, I do not include people in those photos.
Really?
No.
Why not?
No. They just take away from the scene, that's all.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, if you're shooting it, say, for a, an editorial story that you're doing, and you have to have people in there playing, or if it's a particular person that you're photographing on a course, that's a whole other situation.
Or it's a charity tournament, and you need to make a report or make a flyer for it for next year.
Right, but then you're not really out there photographing the golf course. You're out there photographing people playing golf.
Okay, so if your focus is the golf course, stay away from people. If your focus are the people, then don't try to do a landscape shot with it as well.
No, they're very good, distinct, different shots.
Yeah. So on a landscape, do you prefer looking from the tee box towards the flag, or do you like having the flag in the foreground and having like the fairway or the mountains or the ocean, whatever, in your background? How do you have any preference?
Again, it's what
the light offers.
Not just the light, but it's what the layout of the course presents. Mm-hmm. You know, so a lot of times it can be from right behind the pin, shooting back towards the tee box. A lot of times it can be getting yourself elevated on the tee box. A lot of times it can be, you know, from 150 yards out. Or sometimes it can be from another fairway that you find an interesting angle through trees or around some shrubbery to get a much better picture of another fairway. So, again, it's just a matter of going out, getting familiar with the golf course, looking at it from different angles all over the place, not just walking from hole to hole to hole.
Right. When you know, like you don't like to have people in your photographs, do you not like to put a flag? Is that a subject that is takes too much attention away from the overall picture, or do you like to, or have you incorporated that?
Oh, I've included the flag many times. Uh-huh. Yeah, because that kind of defines the the objective of the golfer is to aim for that flag. So,
and what about foreground, background? I know you're going to come up with the answer. It all depends.
Well,
but I mean,
it does. Yeah, that's my patent answer. It all depends.
Well, this is a bore. No, actually, I've learned a lot already. This is awesome. But is there preferences on foreground, background? What should be in focus? What should be, your f-stop, your change, so you have depth of field, or just wide open, so everything's in focus?
I try to get as much in focus as possible.
On landscapes.
On landscapes, and make that photo as sharp as possible, mm-hmm. and create as much depth of field as you can. That's my preference. Just really bring the whole scene into play. Because, the golf course, when you look at it, any fairways is kind of it's part of the overall surrounding that a golf course architect even looks at. To, when he's visualizing a course being laid out, he's utilizing the surrounding landscape. So really, that's what I try to do when I'm looking at a golf course that's already there. Okay, so he's already done the work of, working that golf course into the landscape, and now it's my job or any photographer's job to go in there and capture what he's already laid down. So why not incorporate the whole scene, whether it's mountains in the back or shooting over a marsh or a river on the side, right?
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking notes.
You're taking notes?
Yeah. I want to remember these things.
You've got it recorded.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
I can listen to it again. Never mind.
Yeah.
And if I can make two suggestions, again, when I was on this vacation, we were on a group trip, and I was watching people take photographs. Nope. I was watching people snap pictures over and over and over, and I was the guy that, can I have your photographs? Because I had a bigger camera, so they thought I was a photographer.
Exactly.
But there's two things that I saw that really drove me crazy. One, all of you peoples who are taking your vacation photos with an iPhone.
Mm.
Question number one, why? Statement number one, if you're going to do that, do not treat that camera as an iPhone. It's not a phone. Turn it over on its side and make it a photograph. I can't believe how many people just hold it up like a phone and go click, click, click. It's like, Oh my God, what are you doing? And go ahead.
I was going to say, that's what this world has come to. Everybody is a photographer out there. Mm-hmm. Just like, everybody is a writer, That's,
yeah, right. And the other suggestion that I'm going to come up with on photographs that drives me crazy is that when people send me pictures of, can you take a picture of us, please? It's like, I'm never in the pictures wherever we go with the family, every event, something.
You didn't tell me about it. Yeah, I know. I have no recorded history of my life.
Well, you do. It's just, I was there, but you just know what I look like,
Yeah.
I mean, and someone recently said to me, well, you're the family photographer. That's why you're not in any pictures. But, we all look back to your pictures. It's like, thank you. I appreciate it. But the other thing that makes me crazy when I hand someone a camera and I say, can you please take a picture of us? I want a picture of my wife or my kids and I standing here.
Uh-huh.
Don't put the face of the person in the very middle of the picture.
Uh-huh.
And then have their feet, but I got to get their whole body in, right? So now you have half of a photograph where these people are standing there and they're really teeny. And then from their head up is just sky. It's all wasted space.
Exactly.
Take it. Look at TV. Watch where the news guy, his head comes almost to the top of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
His face is not in the middle of the screen. Just move the camera down a little bit and put the person's face at the top of the screen. Don't worry. You're not going to cut their head off. It's okay. Yeah. Don't freak out about it. Look at the entire – not. Don't look just at the center of the image when you're about to shoot. Look at all four corners. Cut it up into the – what is it? Rule of thirds?
Rule of thirds, right.
Right.
I mean, but again, these are your individuals that just want to capture the moment.
Right.
Quickly, they don't have a sense of composition.
Well, we're trying to teach.
Well, you can try to teach it, but a lot of it is just, like I mentioned earlier, it's innate. You either have it or you don't. You know?
I don't know. I think a lot of it is skill, and a lot of it is learned. I mean, I learned.
Oh, sure.
I took a photography class in high school. Okay, mm-hmm. My sophomore year of high school, and okay. I had a teacher who told me one of the greatest things, and it actually I apply it to golf too, and for when I'm actually doing video work. He said, "Do not ask me what kind of camera I have. Mm-hmm. I don't care."
Exactly.
It's about the image, not about the camera.
It's the person behind it, creating that image.
Right. And
it's
now,
like, it's like, don't ask me what kind of golf clubs I play.
Right. What kind of ball you play? Huh? The white one?
Yeah. It doesn't matter.
I play the Dixon Earth balls. I like my eco-friendly balls. That's a plug for Dixon. I still love those balls. I don't know what model driver this is. Hey, have you seen the new R11?
I can still kick your ass. Doesn't matter with my 20-year-old clubs. I don't care what you're playing.
You see how far I hit it? Yeah, to the right.
You know, but it's like I can still take my old film cameras, which I still have. I don't shoot film anymore, but I still have them. But I can still take those cameras and put those up against anyone shooting with a digital camera today and still come out with a much better photograph, because it's all about the composition
of the photograph, yeah,
and the lighting. Mm-hmm. That's it. Those are the crucial elements. It's not, you know, the $5,000 Nikon that I'm using, as opposed to a $100 Instamatic.
Right. And this is directed to not you, Robert, but you who are listening. If, in fact, this is fascinating to you and you're like, I need to know more about it, just type in Google rule of thirds. Uh-huh. And start with that. And once you understand rule of thirds, then move from there. And that'll improve your photograph so much. I mean, I know that on this show, I have gotten individual tips on golf that have had an impact on the game for me from that point on. So for golf course photography, look up rule of thirds. It's going to change everything. Now, you mentioned something that I want to, before we wrap it up, I want to ask you about, and that is, you know, there's a lot of people going, I still listen to my records because vinyl is better than digital. What is your feeling about 35mm film versus digital photography and the state of it today?
Well, for obvious reasons, that why no one shoots film anymore is because it's either not made, too expensive, and it just doesn't make sense because, you know, obviously you can go out there and click, 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 click mm-hmm. with digital. You know, if you don't like it, toss them away, start over again.
Yeah, just, it doesn't cost you a thing to delete it.
Doesn't cost you a penny, exactly. You've got that card, it'll last a long time.
Yeah.
And use it over and over and over again. Download the photos, you start from scratch, you're ready to go. So, you know, as far as quality, you know, film, the older film, you know, some of it, you know, whatever is still made still might have some better quality products to it as far as color saturation and so forth. But again, you know, once you get to a certain level of, you know, resolution with digital photography, it's not gonna have any bearing whatsoever. You know, digital photography today is so far superior to what it was, you know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago. There's no reason anybody should be shooting film unless you're just stuck on vinyl.
Okay, say we have the opportunity for a late afternoon. We're on a golf course, you know, we're wrapping it up at late afternoon, and it's just a beautiful sky. You have this great opportunity to get photographed. Mm-hmm. And what is my ISO setting should be, and what is that?
That is your, what should I say, ISO. It's probably easier to Google it, but it's it plays into what your f-stop and speed will be. So the lower ISO setting, for instance, 100 ISO, as opposed to 800. At 100 ISO, you're going to have to use a lower f-stop and a or.
Well, I know cameras will automatically adjust your f-stop and your shutter speed.
Yeah.
Do they automatically adjust the ISO as well?
No.
You set that.
You set that, and then if you're using your camera on automatic mode, then the camera will adjust accordingly. But if you're shooting manually, where you want to play with the f-stops to affect your depth of field or your speed, depending upon if you need fast shutter speed, then you have to determine what ISO you want to use. But the higher ISO you go into, you're going to start losing a little bit of that color quality or sharpness to your photo.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. Good. That's why I asked. I was curious. What am I sacrificing?
Yeah, but you have to go. You have to go to a pretty high ISO. I mean, back in the day, you can shoot at 800, for instance, ISO, and you would come up with very grainy looking photographs. Today, it's not going to have any effect whatsoever.
What does it mean to shoot in RAW? And is it necessary? Or what does it mean for me?
For you, probably nothing. You know, it's a RAW image is for use by professional photographers to have a image that they can work with in the darkroom. And when I say darkroom, I mean on the computer. So if they're working with, software like Photoshop, where they have to manipulate the color, the sharpness, anything about the photograph.
Or like just cropping it and just taking the entire photograph but just wanting a small section of it? Does that...
No, anybody can crop a photograph. It doesn't have to be a raw image.
Okay.
But a raw image just allows you to play with the various layers of that image, that digital image. Okay? Mm-hmm. It's a lot more technical than I can explain or get into.
Okay, then I won't do it.
Okay.
Do you miss this? Do you miss the smell of a dark room?
Hell no.
I just remember when I had that high school class. Guess who sat next to me in my high school photography class? Come on, give you a guess. I bet you won't.
Next to you in your high school photography?
My high school photography class, the person sitting next to me in class was, don't even try to guess because you, Jermaine Jackson of the Jackson 5. Wow. So anyway, I remember.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I was thinking about the class and that we were only doing black and white photography at that point. But I just remember the smell of the darkroom, the chemicals, was just it's like so distinct. And it's like, oh, that was fun. But I spent way too much time in there.
Way too many hours. In fact, I'm surprised I'm even alive today. Yeah, that stuff just gets in your clothes. It gets in your system. And, you reek.
Ugh.
Yeah. And just with your hands and the developer, the stop, the fix, all that stuff.
Yeah, you talk about reeking. I worked in rock and roll radio in the early 80s and the late 70s. You want to talk about reek? Different kind of reek. So, give me a URL where we can go see some of your work.
Some of my work can be looked at www.rkaufmanphoto.
R K A U FMAN
photo
PHOTO
correct.
Okay.
.com
rkaufmanphoto.com. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Hey Robert, thanks for finally for finally getting to do this with me. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and actually I it's peripherally around golf, but I learned a lot about taking better pictures when I go out to the golf course. Better photographs. Nothing.
Well, just like golf, practice. That's all it is.
Thanks, buddy.
You got it. Thank you, Fred.
Up next, Living the American Dream, the story of a Korean family who purchased a golf course and have turned it into their family business. Questions, comments, suggestions? Just click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.